UConn gets revenge as the defending champion Florida Gators go down in the Big Apple. Rutgers and Seton Hall renew their rivalry at the Rock. We'll get you ready for Saturday's showdown at the Prudential Center in the latest installment of the Garden State Hardwood Classic. And Tom Pecora has Quinnipiac off and running in the MAC yet again. The head coach of the first place Bobcats is my guest on this episode of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Welcome, everyone. I'm Brian Dinovellis. Hanukkah's closing fast. Christmas only 2 weeks away. And non-conference play is winding down in college basketball. Tis the season, everyone. Hope you're all healthy and well, in a good place as we count the days to the holidays. And hopefully, we can all celebrate something and share in the joy of this holiday season. I know one team in college basketball that's been celebrating a few victories this season. It's Quinnipiac. Just a couple of weeks ago, the Bobcats beat an ACC team for the first time ever as they took down Pitt. They played two games in the MAC, won them both, convincingly, I might add. One at Iona, never an easy place to play, and home to Ryder. The team currently stands at 7-3. They are tied for first place in the conference with four other teams, Siena, Marist, St. Peter's, and Merrimack. Why am I not surprised? It's my pleasure to welcome back to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast, Quinnipiac head coach Tom Pecora. Coach, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, pleasure to be here with you. Thank you for having us.
Hey, you guys, the last couple of years, you guys have really been, the measuring stick in the MAC conference, coach, and you've picked up right where you left off. You lost a lot from last year. How were you able to build this roster and really, keep the momentum going in Hamden, Connecticut?
Yeah, well, look, Amari Monroe's got a lot to do with it. He's been here for 3 years, and the decision he made to stay here at Quinnipiac instead of taking some very lucrative offers from some major conference teams, changed the whole dynamic. We thought we were going to be good with or without him. There would have been a greater burden, obviously, on our younger players that are back. But he's our one true senior. Sim Jones is also a senior playing a lot, but he transferred in this year from Florida International. So he hasn't been in the program for a number of years. So it's a different kind of senior. So in Amari's case, he's the one true leader that we have, a veteran. And then we got a bunch of young bucks that are all freshmen and sophomores after that are getting the minutes. So Amari's got a lot to do with the success we've had here.
And I'll tell you what, I it was well chronicled over the summer. I mean, there were a lot of teams, including UConn, including Pitt, including Rutgers, that were in on Monroe. And I think it turned a lot of heads, coach, in this day of, pay for play, pay for stay, that he stayed. And what did that say? And do you think more college basketball players might say, hey, you know what? The grass isn't always greener on the other side.
Well, I think it's a tough decision to make. I think everyone's situation is an individual one. And depending on your family situation, finances obviously come into play here a great deal because they're throwing some crazy numbers around to a lot of these young men. But in Amari's case, he comes from, a good middle-class family. If there's no milk in the refrigerator, you make those decisions. And it's the smart thing to do because you're going to help your family move forward. But I think he had the ability to really explore it. The fact that he didn't have a great freshman year when he wasn't here at Quinnipiac. He didn't want to go through a year, even if he was getting paid and making money, where he was coming off the bench and he wasn't getting minutes. And, no one's going to assure you you're coming in to start, especially at the highest level. So I think he really was able to consider it, and he was able to make a mature decision. But everyone doesn't have those options. I'm not naive to that. When you're hungry, you make some decisions differently than when you're in a comfortable position. So I think that each young man, it's different. My great concern, I'm in year 40, man. I'm a dinosaur doing this. And my greatest concerns are, are you getting a meaningful degree from wherever you go if you transfer multiple times? And, I watch a game on TV and the kid's been at four different schools in 4 years. Yeah. And that's not a college experience. We all have lifetime friends that we met while we were in college. If you're a great player, where do they hang your number? if you've been at multiple schools, do they hang it at all? So does money solve all of these things? I guess for some it does, but and I think the top 1% are getting real big money, and then there's a lot of money being sprinkled around the infield, so to speak. And I don't know if it has that huge an impact on certain lives. So it's a challenge, man. I feel for the young guys. I know at that age, you should be footloose and carefree and just be worried about handling your academics and playing a little bit of ball. Still getting a scholarship that worth $100,000 here at Quinnipiac, with your summer school and everything that we do for you. So, I'm not a huge fan of it, but the genie's out of the bottle,
Yeah.
and I don't know if you can ever put it back.
Well, I being a dinosaur myself, coach, I'm with you. And I hope that some way, shape, or form, the minds will get together and find a meeting point where yes, you can still get your money, what you're deserving and what you've earned all these years, but hopefully education comes back into play because that's what we are. We're higher educations, and I really hope that education does come to the forefront and they can find some regulation here.
Yeah, no doubt about that. But it's great to have him here. Amari is being the exception to the rule. And, I've talked to a lot of the high school kids we recruited, and I said, hey, I'm like a triple-A baseball coach, man. You come here for 2 years, I'll get you ready for the show. And if you're good enough, we'll help you go to the highest level and get paid well for it.
That makes sense on a lot of levels. I think a lot of coaches are buying into that, and you have to, right? So you have
On
to be
this
careful.
level, yeah. And the kid's getting overlooked. There's a lot of major schools that are not even looking at high school kids anymore. They'll go handpick from lower levels, and there's a food chain there. So, we'll look at some lower Division I and some Division II programs as well. But it's like a scavenger hunt. I'm not a fan.
Well, you're doing it pretty well. Jaden Zimmerman, maybe he was a guy who was a little under-recruited, right? I
Very
mean,
much so, yeah.
PSAL Player of the Year, didn't have a lot of high major offers, comes out and first team All MAC as a rookie, or I should say all rookie team as a freshman. And
Yes.
then this year he's blown up. I mean, he's your leading scorer. What a story he's been.
Yeah, he's been great. Jay-Z's doing a great job. And he had some options last year, not great sums of money, but and we sat down with him and his family, and I just said, I think you can get more after 1 more year. Come back and be an all-conference player, and then you can make real money your last 2 years if that's the path you want to go. And that's why he came back. And I think the fact that we have him and Amari together, along with a Grant Randall and obviously Samson Riley and a number of other weapons out there, people are so concerned with the balance that we have that it's allowing Jay-Z to really put up some great numbers early on. Now I think the focal point will turn to him a little bit more, scouting as we move forward, and then it gives other guys an opportunity to step up and show what they're capable of.
Well, you have depth this year. There's no doubt it was on display against Iona. Coach, I know it's one game, one of 20 in the MAC. It's a grind, right? And everyone wants to, hang that banner come conference tournament time. But for a first game on the road in that environment with the highest scoring team in the MAC, to hold them to, I think it was 68 points, to score what you did and win by double digits, very impressive. How'd you do it?
Well, it was definitely too early to play that game. And it's the first thing I said in the press conference afterwards. I was glad we won. So when I did say it, I didn't sound like sour grapes, I probably would not have said that had we lost. But yeah, I just think for two teams that are going to be picked at the top of the conference year in and year out, that should be a game that's played in January and then again in February. But this year, we're just only playing them once. So it made it that much more important. We only play them once and Siena once. And both are on the road. And, the three of us were picked in the top four, along, I believe, with Marist in the preseason poll and Sacred Heart. So, in the top five. So, it was a big game for us, and the guys really responded. We were in a little foul trouble early, but we were able to keep the lead in the first half. And then in the second half, the first 10 minutes, we really kind of blew it open and got some separation. But look, Iona's a good team, and, we'll see them again come tournament time. And I'm sure they'll be better. Dan's doing a great job there, and we'll all get better as the year progresses, hopefully, as long as you stay healthy.
Do you think in some way, you said you have a young team, but you have some veterans. Do you think that experience helped a little bit? And the way you bullied them, I mean, outscoring them 46-32 in the paint, I thought your will was stronger than theirs, and that helped.
I mean, once again, I think, the first half they were dominant in the paint for a while. It's something I discussed with the team at halftime. But I think we have great length. We have eight guys 6'6" or bigger. So for a mid-major team, that's big. And if we get our mind right and get on the glass at both ends, that should be a huge positive for us. Limiting your opponent to one shot. And not allowing them to get any offensive boards. We did a much better job in the second half against them with that. And then it gives you great opportunities, if not for a quick dunk or layup on the rebound at the offensive end, but kicking it out and moving the ball and getting, you got a defense that's scrambling there, so you get a better opportunity to get a great shot. So, I've kind of always been a defend and rebound guy. I know it's a lot easier to score when your opponent misses than it is when they put it through the hoop. So, that's really what we preach day to day.
Love your depth, coach. And I saw some stats this week that to me were eye-openers. You have two players coming off the bench leading the nation in categories. Ty Turnage, New York City point guard, right? Assist to turnover ratio is 10.3. That's unheard of. I know it's a small sample, but he has 31 assists to three turnovers, leading the nation in that category coming off the bench. That's impressive.
It is. Hey, New York City point guards, obviously, I was a crummy one 100 years ago. But I'm so old, I recruited Ty's father. And
Wow.
his dad, Billy, is the head coach at Holy Cross High School in Queens. Ty played at St. Raymond's for a great coach, Georgie Lopez, who we know well and I've known for many, many years. And he was playing varsity basketball as a freshman, even at that small size. And we were debating and discussing. I always discuss it with my players about the possibility of redshirting when they're freshmen, and I always leave it up to them. I don't want to make those decisions. And he wanted to play, and obviously it's been great for us that he has, because when he comes off the bench, there's nothing more you can ask for. Yeah, as everyone talks about point guards being an extension of the coach, so every coach goes crazy about turnovers. So when you have a point guard who's solid and the way he is, it's special. And he's splitting the point guard duties now, but that'll come night to night depending on how things are going and the flow of the game and things of that nature. And then with Asim graduating this year, we hand the ball to him, and we have a veteran point guard after 1 year. We only call it, we have freshmen and we have veterans. You're a veteran by the end of your freshman year or the beginning of your sophomore year. So it's exciting to have someone like him in the program that we can hand the basketball to. And you mentioned Samson shooting the ball at such a high level, and that, the work defines the man. That's the big sign we have in our office, our locker room rather, downstairs, on one wall. And nobody, I've been around this game for a long, long time, no one has ever worked harder. I've coached guys that have worked as hard, but no one works harder at their game than Samson Riley does. And once again, another son of a high school coach, legendary in both cases, and a great, Connecticut's number one basketball family, in my opinion, the Rileys. So, we're lucky to have both of them, and they're mature beyond their years as freshmen.
Yeah, well, that's a family near and dear to my heart. Samson Riley, by the way, leading the nation right now in 3-point shooting percentage, 61%. Coach, you and I talked a little bit beforehand, but I played with his father, Luke, who's a legendary coach at East Catholic. He was a few years younger than me. I was a senior. He was a freshman. Played 3 years with his uncle Joe, who is the head coach at Wesleyan. And we all played for their legendary father, Joe Riley, who would be Samson's grandfather. May
Yes,
he rest
yeah.
in peace. And what a great, I mean, they are to me, for people in this tri-state area, the Rileys are to Connecticut what the Hurleys are to New Jersey.
Man, very much so. Yeah, I think that they're a special family, and when you have smart backcourt play and you have two coaches' kids in the game together, it makes me look like I know what I'm doing. So, I'm all for that.
Like you said, is there something to coaches' sons, gym rats being like that, and maybe they're a little bit of an extension of you, like you said?
Yeah, very much so. I think, look, if you can survive the gauntlet of having a father who's a coach and you do choose to play, I think it can only help you as you grow as a player. So we're lucky to have them both.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Fun team to watch, coach. You talked about defense and rebounding. Your team is right up there near the top of the standings in defense. How much do you work on defense in practice?
Well, we do a lot. I mean, Umar Shannon is my defensive coordinator. I was a junior high football coach 100 years ago when I first got out of college,
Love it.
and I've always kind of given responsibility to my staff. Half of my career, over 40 years, I was an assistant coach, and the hardest time was when I was working for certain coaches that just did everything and didn't let assistants do a whole lot in practice. And I, as a head coach, I always did the opposite. I worked for young coach. I worked for Bob McKillop, Steph Curry's coach at
Wow.
Davidson. When I first got out of college as a high school coach, I was his assistant at Long Island Lutheran High School. I worked for Rolly Masomino, who was, obviously a basketball savant. Jay Wright and I were his assistants together. Then I worked with Jay at Hofstra as his top assistant. So when you're around those kind of coaches, they give you great responsibility, and they allow you to work, and they allow you to grow as a coach. And I want the same thing. I remember when I was teaching school and coaching in high school, the guys I worked with, Rich Smith and Ed Phillips, used to say, "Stand on my shoulders. If I'm this good at coaching, I want you to be that much better." And that's the way I feel about my staff. So Sean Morris is our offensive coordinator. He does a great job with our offense, and we discuss everything that we're going to do, but then I give them the freedom to be on the floor, to coach it up each day, to meet with the guys and show them some film and do all these things. So it's all coordinated, but it comes back to that football mindset. When I was coaching at Hofstra, the Jets practice facility was still on campus at Hofstra University,
Yeah.
and I had the opportunity on a couple of occasions to sit in on Herm Edwards' staff and team meetings, Pete Carroll when he was there for the 1 year, and I took a lot of that with me and just translated it over to basketball. We use football terms. Our double teams are blitzes and different aggressive terms in that regard. But when it comes to managing a staff, I really thought that that was special, a special way to do it. And Jeff Robinson, another very talented young coach who's here with me, does all our special team stuff, baseline, sidelines, end of game situations. So we really divide it up well. And I think as I get older, I'm a wise old coach. Maybe there's a little less on my plate this way too, but I think it's important to let your staff coach and grow, and understanding they're going to make mistakes on occasion, but so do we all. But that's a responsibility. I was a teacher first, so I still feel like I'm an educator in coaching, and that's always been my mindset. So it's worked out well so far. Knock on wood.
The two, knock on wood, coach. The two go hand in hand, teaching, educating, and that's what you're doing. And I guess as you get older with experience, like you said, you learn to delegate, you learn to trust the people around you and let them have a little bit more. I love that. You said you coached football. Did you
Yeah.
coach any other sports, right? You're an ed you're
Well,
an educator. You probably started to
when I
make
first
money.
got out, when I first got out of Adelphi University, I was, I was substitute teaching. I was driving a truck, moving furniture on weekends. I was coaching during the week. I was bartending one night a week. So, just trying to make ends meet. And I coached junior high football in the fall, high school basketball. I was the freshman basketball coach at Long Island Lutheran High School. I was teaching in Garden City, Long Island, but I was coaching football there, and then I did Lehigh basketball, and then in the spring, with the first year, I think I coached softball, just because I needed a paycheck. I wasn't
Right.
making any money. I was trying to make ends meet, and that went on for a couple of years. And an interesting story was I got a phone call from a classmate that I went to school with at Adelphi, who was also a teacher, phys ed major, and struggling to find jobs, and he had gotten a job selling children's clothes with the company Oshkosh B'gosh,
I
and they
know
were
it.
blowing up, and they needed salespeople, and they were earmarking teachers. So he got me an interview. I got a job. I worked for 6 months selling children's clothes in Manhattan, and 2 days before Christmas, I quit because I just missed coaching and teaching so much. And had I stuck with that, I guess I would have been an old salesman right now,
Yeah,
Some people might say I still am. I don't know.
but maybe you would have been, a CEO of Children's Place selling 2T and 3T.
You never know, right? You make plans and God laughs.
Amen. It's been a nice run for you, coach, all these years coaching and learning, like you said, under so many greats, and now, you're at the point where you're trying to get there, and you had a big win this year over Pitt, and lo and behold, a couple of weeks later, a guy that you had as your point guard at Hofstra, Speedy Claxton, Hofstra beats Pitt. So how cool is that? You beat Pitt, first time you beat an ACC program, and then somebody you coached is coaching at Hofstra where you coached, and they beat Pitt. Did you talk to
Yeah,
him?
well, I talked to Speedy Sunday night after the game, and now we have to go down and try to beat Speedy in a week, and they're really
Unbelievable.
good. I'm not looking forward to that. I like the idea of getting home to Long Island, but that's going to be a challenge playing them. I'm so old, I still thought Pitt was in the Big East. I almost forgot they were in the ACC when they brought it up to me, because I was weaned on those great Pitt teams in the Big East.
Is
But
Jerome Lane and Charles Smith still on
yeah, exactly,
the
right. Yeah, Speedy's, look, Speedy was the one who, I was an assistant for Jay, right, at Hofstra. We came there together from out west, and Speedy, the building they play in, we refer to as the house that Speedy built, because by him coming to Hofstra and at the end of his year, he turned down every major school in the country wanted to come in and get him, because he had committed early to us but was signing late. And he was on a great high school team with Lamar Odom and Eric Barkley, and
Oh
just
my God.
a bomb squad. And he was kind of overlooked early. But when people haven't met him and then they do, he was obviously a 10-year pro. He was an elite athlete. He's a better person. He's just a great, humble guy. Our friendship obviously has grown from the time I first met him when he was 15 or 16 to now. Both me being an old man and him being a very talented middle-aged coach. So I'm so proud of him. We all are, in what he's done, and for a university where I worked there 18 years. So I had a real strong connection to Hofstra.
Wonderful. Life's all about relationships. I learned that from my dad and my family. And no matter where you go in this business, in this world, somehow you have these relationships. They're always going to be connected with you in some way.
Right, no doubt. And surround yourself with good people. That helps the process, right?
Love that. Love that. So, coach, before I let you go, last question. The coaches pick these polls in the beginning of the year, and who knows, right? You hear, you see, you look. Who knows? But after playing a couple of rounds of MAC games and seeing what's happened in the conference, I'm not looking for you to rank them, but how do you stack things up, and how things are gonna shape up this year in this always wide open and fun to watch conference?
Yeah, well, I think it's never been more unpredictable because of the transfer portal. So, they ask us who's going to be where, and basically, when guys do the preseason poll, they look to see what teams kept the most players, and they say, "All right, I guess I'll go with them." But I have no idea how good a lot of the players that these teams are bringing in from transfers from all over the country, nor do they, the guys we have. So, I think right now the whole thing is. It's unpredictable in every way, shape, and form. So you can go into it thinking that this is going to happen, and then, as we all know, you're a sprained ankle away from the whole thing changing. Lose your point guard and see how good you're going to be for the next couple of weeks if he can't play, right? Or your power forward or whoever it might be. Once again, I'm so old. I remember when you didn't play your first game till Thanksgiving weekend, and now we're playing the first few days of the month of November. And it's a marathon. The season is longer than it's ever been. And in mid-December here, getting to mid-December, we're still growing as a team. I mean, we're still putting things in practice. It's not like we have everything complete, and we're not a complete team yet in any aspect of what we're doing. We really haven't taken on our full personality yet. And I think that's going to be challenging. I know as a coach, I'm coaching differently, knowing that I'm going to have so many new guys each year. Trying to simplify certain things and really trim the fat and make sure that the things that are most important we're good at early in the year. But time will tell. Once again, if we stay healthy and we continue to get good play from Amari and our other veterans who are the sophomores, Jay-Z and a few of the other guys, Grant Randall, as I mentioned, and if we continue to get good play from those guys, I think we could do okay this year.
Yeah, coach, I think you're going to be right in the middle of things with a lot of teams, and whether it's Iona, whether it's Sacred Heart, whether it's Marist, whether it's Manhattan, Siena, a lot of good teams out there, a lot of good tests. Really appreciate you taking time to come on the show, and from somebody from Connecticut who grew up with, Division II Quinnipiac. All right, it's great to see this team succeeding at the Division I level, and you at the helm. Bringing it to heights they haven't seen before, and hopefully you have a lot more success this season. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you very much. We all appreciate it here. Hope to see you soon at a game.
All right, coach. The man knows what he's talking about. And sooner or later, I have a feeling Tom Pecora will get that monkey off his back and head to the NCAA tournament with this Quinnipiac team and make history as the first head coach ever to lead Quinnipiac to a Division I conference championship and the NCAA tournament. Could happen this year, but I think it's coming. Tough schedule lies ahead. They will play UMass Lowell on Saturday. Then, as coach alluded to, they visit Monmouth and Hofstra. They host Marist to end 2025 before they turn the calendar. We will know a lot more about Quinnipiac in the weeks ahead. All right. Let's go around the tri-state, and I want to begin with the showdown at Madison Square Garden. What a game last night between UConn and Florida together. They have won nine national championships. They are the last two teams to win back-to-back titles in men's college basketball. Florida doing it in 2006 and 2007. UConn, of course, in 23-24. You want me to go further? They have won the last three national championships. So this was championship pedigree at its best. And you're talking about a Florida team that, yes, had a few losses, but when you look at their resume, I mean, they have played as tough a schedule as anyone in the country, losing to Arizona and Duke and UConn by a combined 11 points. Florida will be just fine. Todd Golden has arguably the biggest, best front line in the country, along with maybe an Illinois team, maybe Michigan. I mean, they are just loaded on the front line, and nothing but respect for Coach Hurley and Coach Golden after this one turned out. UConn just put in a workmanlike performance, and they prevailed. If you didn't see the game, 77-73. It's not like, UConn dominated or Florida. Both teams had leads in this game. UConn played a great first half. They were in foul trouble up and down their lineup, but they led by seven at the half. And then in the second half, I mean, they were shooting, I think, 59% in the first half, lights out, but foul trouble kept Florida in the game with the free throw line. And then early in the second half, Florida came out and made some adjustments, got the ball inside. I mean, their bigs are just dynamite. And then you had someone like Xavier Lee playing maybe his best game. It was this or the Providence game. We know that name in the tri-state because of the success he had at Princeton and really helped Princeton get to the NCAA tournament along with Caden Pierce. He left for greener pastures, took advantage of an opportunity, got his degree at Princeton, and is playing his final season at Florida. But you know what? The SEC is a big jump. It's a major jump from the Ivy League, and not everyone can do it. But I'll say this, has he struggled? Sure, but he was the best guard on the floor. It was him or Solo Ball, and at times he outplayed UConn's backcourt for sure. He gave them fits all night. Didn't shoot the ball well, but Xavier Lee did very well, getting to the free throw line, causing fits, getting rebounds, getting assists. He had a nice all-around game, finished with 19 points, six rebounds, five assists in almost 38 minutes. He was dynamite. And that front line, I mean, Thomas Howell, what a beast he is. And Alex Condon, I mean, these guys can play. And that is as big a front line as you will see. And nothing but compliments after the game. UConn, I'm not going to say they survived. I think the better team won. But you know what? If they played each other again, it wouldn't surprise me if Florida beat them. But afterward, Danny Hurley knows Iron sharpens iron. He has nothing but respect for Florida. And he talked about the matchup and where the Huskies stand at 4-1 in top 25 matchups for his UConn Huskies this season. Here's what he had to say.
Their championship level program, and one of the premier college basketball programs in like modern basketball, like the last 25, 30 years. It's one of the top, top five programs, just so it's an honor to share the court with them, and obviously feel great about getting a win. This was a big win for us, just to try to, do a great job with our non-conference. We put together a monster of a schedule. We've dealt with some injuries and different things along the way, but to be at 9-1 with everything that the team's been through versus the quality that we've had to play against, with the schedule, just impressed with what we've been able to do.
Yeah, and UConn has one more big non-conference matchup. It's against Texas on Friday, People's Bank Arena. Hurley had a message, let's make it loud, because he knows it's not like the on-campus comforts of the Gamble Pavilion, but People's Bank Arena, Hartford Civic Center, as we used to call it, is certainly a home court advantage. It will be a sellout. And for those of you watching that game on Friday night, couple of familiar names: Sean Miller, former coach at Xavier. We know him well in the Big East. He is the head coach at Texas. Another player to look out for: Simeon Wilcher, former St. John's player, right? Went to Texas this year, not starting but coming off the bench, averaging about 9 points a game. So, if UConn can pass that test in the non-conference, this stretch of playing six top 40, top 50 KenPom teams in a matter of 3 weeks, if they can come out of that 5-1 and UConn at 10-1 overall, they will be right where most of us expected them to be. No one expected them to go 11-0, but a lot of us had them pegged at 10-1, and that is right where they should be. But let's get back to this game a little bit. My thoughts on this are this: their depth is as good as any team in the country. And when you have guys like Solo Ball and Terrace Reed and Alex Caravan at full strength, those are your three veteran players. Those are your big three. And those big three showed up when it mattered. Did they have great shooting nights? They had good shooting nights. I think Solo Ball would have liked to have had a better shooting night, but it was good to see, him put the ball in the basket. When you have Alex Caravan and Solo Ball making six threes, three apiece, that's really good. But you had 19 from Ball, 13 from Caravan, 12 and 5 from Reed. Reed's at about 75%, still, hobbling from hamstring and ankle injuries. The guy's a warrior. He was not going to miss this game. And the scary part about UConn is we still haven't seen this team at full strength. They have weathered the storm. Without Terrace Reed, without Braylon Mullins. All right. And Braylon Mullins might be the most talented player on this team when it's all said and done. All right. He may be a lottery pick, and maybe, the only lottery pick amongst this current group. Who knows? Eric Riba, maybe he might be someday soon. But my point is this: the Huskies are deep. We haven't seen them at full strength. They're only going to get better. They are here to stay. They are very much a Final Four national championship contender, along with, right now, I think you got to put them with Arizona. You got to put them with Duke. Yes, you have to put them with Purdue. And who am I missing there? Maybe Iowa State, but it's those teams: UConn, Duke, Michigan, Arizona, and Purdue are certainly at the top of that list, and maybe Iowa State too. All right, but those are Final Four national championship contenders at the very top of that list. And when this team gets healthy, if they can stay healthy, keep Terrace Reed on the court. I have said it. He is their most important player. I'm not saying best player. He is their most important player. Just see what he does. The first 4 minutes of this game, he had 6 points. I mean, he's so important that off the opening tip, off their opening possession, Dan Hurley called a play for Terrace Reed, got his man pinned in the post, and put a low post move, a little short jump hook. UConn had its first 2 points of the game. He looked very good in the first few minutes. UConn kind of got away from him and then went back to him in the second half. He is their most important player. When he's at full strength, he solidifies them offensively and defensively in the post. Another player I want to talk about is Malachi Smith. Find me a better backup point guard in the country. Find me a backup point guard in the country who has 3 games this year, 3 games where he's had at least 8 assists, and they were in high level games. He had 8 assists against Arizona, 9 assists against Illinois, and 9 more assists against Florida. All top 25 teams, all high caliber teams in marquee matchups. Find me another backup point guard in the country that has done that. You can't. He might run this offense better than Silas Demery. Silas Demery is the starter and probably will remain the starter for the remainder of the season, but there is no drop off. And when you look at this team and you bring in a player like Jaden Ross, who really solidified the defense in the second half, okay? And when you can bring in Eric Riba off the bench and Braylon Mullins for now off the bench, there is no drop off on this second team. And Dan Hurley was asked about the depth of this team after the game, and here's what he had to say about that.
The defense is where we need it to be to, you know, to compete for the things at UConn that you want to. I thought, you know, I thought we were, you know, pretty good offensively, 18 assists on 50% shooting. The strength of the team is it's the nine guys. I mean, when you have nine quality players, you know, you could survive an off night, you know, from multiple people and still, you know, get enough scoring production to win the game.
Yeah, getting scoring production and overall production from multiple people in the game. Bench points 20-6, advantage UConn. The bench doesn't win you games, okay? Your stars do most of the time. But when your stars are off, your bench is needed to win games. Your bench can certainly lose you games. They can certainly kill your momentum. We've seen that time and time again. But when there's no drop off like this, that is a weapon to have. UConn, look out. They're going to be favored against Texas. They should win that game and head into the Big East regular season feeling very good about where they are. And they're only going to get better when they get more healthy. All right. That's the UConn story. I want to talk about the game of the week here in the Tri-State coming up on Saturday, the Garden State Hardwood Classic. I wish it was a moment where both teams were riding high and both teams were at the top of their games, but unfortunately, it's not. You have the polar opposite of last year when Rutgers was feeling pretty good about themselves with a very talented team, and Seton Hall was in the midst of their worst season ever in 100 plus years of basketball. I'm not saying there's a lot of talent. There's that type of talent on the Seton Hall team, but this team, the sum of their parts is greater than their whole, right? I never know how to explain that, but I just know that basically there's no stars on this Seton Hall team. And right now, Shaheen Holloway has them playing exactly the way he wants them to play. They are top 40 in the net. They are number 38, and Rutgers is trending in the opposite direction at 192. What does that mean? That means Seton Hall cannot lose this game. This is a quad four matchup for Seton Hall. Okay, as it stands now, 192. It is a quad one opportunity for Rutgers. Rutgers has nothing to lose, everything to gain. Seton Hall has to win this game. But in rivalries, as certainly as we've seen in recent years, okay, the better team doesn't always win. In 2023, Seton Hall shocked Rutgers at Rutgers home court. All right, it was a low-scoring affair, and we didn't know what that Seton Hall team was going to be, but we knew Rutgers had a lot of veterans on that team, and they were the better team and lost at home. The next year, I should say that was 2022. In 2023, the next year, they played at Seton Hall. Seton Hall had by far the better team, and Rutgers, I believe, hit 12 threes in that game and shocked them at the Prudential Center. And then last year, 2024, Rutgers head and shoulders, head and shoulders. This should have been a 15 to 18 point Rutgers win, but it took a last second buzzer beating highlight top 10 ESPN moment, shot by Dylan Harper at the buzzer, came down the court unguarded, untouched, unmolested, and pulled up from about 27 feet and gave Rutgers a heart attack victory over an overmatched and underwhelming Seton Hall team. So my point is this: you never know what's going to happen in this rivalry. I believe Seton Hall will be about an 8 to 9 point favorite. They should win by double digits, but I wouldn't bet against Rutgers because of this rivalry. So let's break it down. All right, we got to this point where Rutgers has certainly struggled. All right, Dylan Grant is by far their best player. He's a player that everyone is gaming for. He's a player that everyone's scheming for, and you're seeing a team that doesn't do a whole lot very well. They don't play defense very well, and they don't play offense at all. All right. They are the lowest scoring team in the Big Ten, 18 out of 18 teams in scoring at under 70 points a game. And defensively, you'd like them to be better, but they're right in the middle of the pack. So they're an okay defensive team. I think they'll get better, but they're not a good offensive team. They're not a good shooting team whatsoever at all. I believe they're last in the Big Ten or close to it in field goal percentage. Out of 18 teams, I think they're 16th or 17th in field goal percentage. They're getting better at shooting threes, but what do they do well? Well, they're getting better. That's what they're doing well. And we're seeing players who are starting to evolve. And Steve Peichel has made it clear he's not going to be afraid to bench anyone. Even if it's Dylan Grant and Darren Buchanan, if they're not defending like they did not against Purdue, if they're not rebounding, then they're going to be benched for stretches. And he's playing freshman. He's playing Dennis Badilow. He's playing Haroon Zernow. He's playing Caden Powers. He's playing Chris Nwuli. He's playing Lino Mark. And you're going to see them play even more. After the Purdue game, he said Caden Powers was our best player in practice for the last 2 days. And we saw him get in the game and score a few points against Purdue in the second half. Lino Mark, I think, is getting out there. He's getting minutes, and he is the point guard of the future for this team. All right. Jamichael Davis is playing well, and I think he's playing better than I thought he would this year. And I think he's becoming a capable point guard, but still, they're undersized. And he and Tariq Francis and Lino Mark, when they go into the Big Ten, they're going to have matchup problems, size problems, physicality problems. I think Seton Hall has an edge in that department, especially with Bud Clark. All right. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But you're seeing the freshman develop. I like what I've seen out of Haroon Zernow out of the last couple of games. He's come alive. He has had double digits in the last three games. And I think he's had double digits in, like, something like three out of the last five games where he's had double digits. He's looked well against Michigan. He's looked well against Purdue. So, when you're scoring 13 points against those teams and shooting the ball the way he's doing it, 5 out of 11 in his last two games from three. Maybe they got something in him. Does he need to play better defense? Of course. But if he keeps making threes and keeps scoring, you're going to have a hard time getting him off the floor. So if he and Badilow, they're kind of playing the same position. If he and Badilow can shoot threes and defend a little bit, then maybe Steve Peichel has got something there. So look, I think Rutgers is going to be a better team in February than they are now. And I think that's because these freshmen are going to get more games under their belt. They're going to play more in December, and they're certainly going to play a lot more heading into January. And Steve Peichel is going to play whoever's defending and whoever can make some shots. But it has to begin at the defensive end and rebounding. So when you look at Seton Hall on the other side, this is a team that has vastly overachieved. They're getting votes. I believe they're 31st in the latest top 25 poll. They were picked last in the Big East. And I know awards aren't handed out in December. We know that. But 1 month into this season, Shaheen Holloway is the leading candidate for Big East Coach of the Year. And you can make a case that he's National Coach of the Year. All right. He would certainly get consideration, but there's a long way to go. You're what? A fifth into this season, into this grind of a season. So, who's been the surprises? Well, I think you begin with a player like Stephen Payne. I think you begin with Tawan Simpkins and Mike Williams. We didn't know what to expect of these players, but Stephen Payne is an athletic center who came from Jacksonville, and Tawan Simpkins was a very nice scorer at Elon, and Mike Williams had two, okay seasons at LSU. So they weren't really on the radar. But what did they have? They had experience. They had game experience. And they brought veteran experience, guys who had 1, 2, 3 years of experience at the Division I level. And you're seeing Mike Williams grow into a defensive player, a defensive stopper, getting the other team's best player along with Elijah Fisher. I'm sorry for this team. Mike Williams and Elijah Fisher have been the defensive go-getters. So you're seeing him. You're seeing Mike Williams be able to shoot threes. Tawan Simpkins is one of the best three-point shooters on this Seton Hall team. He leads them at 48%, and Mike Williams is 39%, and A.J. Staton-McRae is at 40%. You have three very capable shooters, and when we came into the season, we didn't know who would be able to make threes and shoot threes for this team. So you're seeing three capable shooters. Bud Clark, you are seeing the evolution of a point guard. You're seeing a guy who basically was the man at Merrimack for 2 years. And now you're seeing the transformation of a player who's learning what it's like to be a point guard in the Big East for Seton Hall, for Shaheen Holloway. It's not easy. Not everyone can play point guard for Shaheen Holloway. Okay? Just ask Garway Dual or anyone else they threw out there last year. It's not easy. It takes time to develop. Even the best ones who did it, whether Shaheen was an assistant under Kevin Willard, all right, it took time for Quincy McKnight to do it. It took time for anyone who came through that system to develop into a player. Jordan Theodore going way back, right? So you're seeing Bud Clark become an extension of Shaheen Holloway. What he's doing is leading this team. He's making everyone around him better. And when he throws in a game like he did at home against Central Connecticut, where he had 10 points and 12 assists, that's the game that you can see out of him. He only had three assists against Kansas State, not his fault, but he still ran the team and had 10 points. All right. This team is battle tested. There are a couple of whistles and a three-pointer away from being undefeated. Okay. But when you go into Kansas State and you win that game by double digits, when you beat a team like Washington State by double digits and NC State by double digits, and your only loss is a two-point loss to South Carolina. I mean, you South Carolina, USC, the USC, right? This team's good. And to me, not everyone's going to score 20 points on this team. That's going to be few and far between. But how do you game plan for this Seton Hall team? It's really hard because you can't just say we're going after A.J. Staton-McRae or Tawan Simpkins. I mean, you have to try to limit Bud Clark, right? It kind of begins there. You have to slow him down, maybe get him into foul trouble. All right. And you can't let a guy like A.J. Staton-McRae and Tawan Simpkins get open looks from three because they will kill you and Mike Williams. But even a guy like Elijah Fisher is capable of leading this team on scoring any given night. So is Najai Hines, who is an absolute force, but we've seen him have highs and lows. He's been injured a little bit. He's a freshman. He's going to have great games, and he's going to have games where he learns. So this Seton Hall team has the edge this year. breaking down this matchup. It'll be a sellout. Word is there were some late student tickets that they were able to sell. I think when you look around the building, you'll have 10,000 in the building. Will it be every seat in the house? Probably not. I think you'll have 10,500 in that building, the majority blue. You'll see some red. So Seton Hall has the home court behind them. I think the guards, Bud Clark and Mike Williams and Tawan Simpkins are simply a better backcourt than what Rutgers rolls out with Tariq Francis and Jamichael Davis and Darren Buchanan. Okay. I think when you look at the forwards, I think Dylan Grant is the most talented forward on the roster, but AJ Stanton-McCray is not far behind. Okay. Not far behind. You want to call it a wash? You want to give Rutgers a slight edge? It can go either way, but Stanton-McCray is a player who has proved to be a money guy for this team, and he can hit shots in the first half. He can hit shots in the second half, and Dylan Grant can do the same. But when you look at the center position, I think that's where Seton Hall has the edge too. I think Stephen Payne and Najai Hines are two very capable centers. They're a very nice 1-2 combination that could go up against any center combination in the Big East. They can. They just have to stay out of foul trouble. Because if those two are in foul trouble, then you have a guy like we saw against Kansas State. Then you have Josh Rivera coming in, who is turning out to be a very nice, 8 to 10 minute guy in this team, but he's 6'6", 6'5". He's undersized. He's not a center. So until this team finds a way to get Godswill Arianna on the floor, and honestly, the longer this goes on, I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine as to when we'll see Godswill Arianna this year. So Seton Hall goes forward without him. My point is this: Stephen Payne, Najai Hines need to stay out of foul trouble. If they do, that's a very nice 1-2 combination that Seton Hall has not had at center in a very long time. So you give them the edge over Emmanuel Ogbole. Emmanuel Ogbole is the center position for Rutgers. And if he's not in the lineup, then they're going small because there is no faith whatsoever in Bayfall. Okay. He is out of the equation. Maybe he shows up here if Ogbole gets in foul trouble just to get some fouls. It wouldn't surprise me, but don't expect anything out of Bayfall other than fouls and a couple of rebounds and maybe a lucky dunk. All right. Emmanuel Ogbole has proven that when he's good, he can be double, double good. But when he's bad, he can be 1 for 5, with 4 points and 5 rebounds. So he's an X factor. How will Emmanuel Ogbole fare against Seton Hall? My other X factors in this game, I would put a guy like Tariq Francis as an X factor because if he can get hot from the outside, I think he and Haroon Zerno are two X factors for Rutgers. If they can score and get some points in production and open things up on the inside, open up the lanes, and Rutgers can get to 8 to 10 threes in this game like they did 2 years ago in this building, they have a fighting chance. If they're 4 for 21, 5 for 19 from three, then I don't think Rutgers stands a chance in this game. They need to be able to hit shots from the outside and get Seton Hall in foul trouble. Those are the keys for Rutgers. I think the X factors you're looking for with Seton Hall, I think Mike Williams is the X factor. All right. Or Elijah Fisher, because those are guys who have proven to be veterans. Those are guys who, if you're getting production out of them, then you don't know who you're going to stop on this team. Because AJ Stanton-McCray is going to get hot, and Tawan Simpkins, the best 3-point shooter on this team, is going to get open looks. And it's going to open up things more for Bud Clark. So that's who I look at as an X factor. Another player who I didn't talk about for Seton Hall is Jacob Dahr. If he provides any minutes off the bench, it's a bonus. But look, you want my prediction on this game? I think Seton Hall wins. I think they control most of this game. It's in double figures, and I think Rutgers pushes it a little bit late, I think Seton Hall ends up winning this game by 8, 9 points, right where I think the spread will be. And Seton Hall moves to 10-1, and they are feeling good about themselves going into Providence. And Rutgers is going to be left to thinking, okay, what comes next? Where do we go from here? It doesn't get any easier. They'll be 5-6, and you're looking at trying to get better against Penn and Delaware State before turning the calendar and going into Big Ten play. Would it shock me if Rutgers wins? No, because we've seen it in recent years. But you want my prediction? That's what I think it is. I think Rutgers loses this game. I'm going to say 73 to 64. And that's my prediction. So that's it. Games to look forward to this week in the tri-state. Some big games coming ahead. And Seton Hall, Rutgers, none bigger than that. Garden State Hardwood Classic, UConn and Texas, and Quinnipiac. Their schedule is going to get very interesting. My thanks to Tom Pecora for coming on, and really, really, I mean, he is just such a good guy and a lifer in this business, and somebody who I respect a great deal, who's done it all from high school on up to the assistants, you know, Villanova, UNLV, programs like that, and obviously Hofstra, and taking over at Hofstra and Fordham, and now Quinnipiac. You talk about a guy who's had a real nice career and a guy you root for sure. My thanks to him. And of course, thanks to you for downloading, listening, and sharing the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Could not do it without you. And a final word from our sponsor as well, Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. If you're looking to buy or sell a home down the Jersey Shore in Monmouth or Ocean Counties, get in touch with Mike, 201-988-2577, and tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Until next time, everyone, enjoy the games. My name is Brian Dinovellis. This is the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. So long.